Immigration. Will the tidal wave ever end? We'll look back at some context about the current crisis on this episode of The Hot Zone.
This is The Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that Twin Cities frame. Hey folks, I'm Chuck Holton. That sonnet you just heard is part of the part you've likely never heard of the poem that adorns Lady Liberty in New York Harbor. It's great literature to be sure, but what do those lofty goals of worldwide welcome mean in today's contentious political environment? Well, we'll explore that on this episode of The Hot Zone. So the crisis at the U.S. southern border is nothing short of catastrophic, not just for American sovereignty, but for the people who are risking everything and leaving their families behind to cross thousands of miles of dangerous territory and grab for their own little slice of the American dream. Many of those people end up being separated from their loved ones for years, only to find out getting into America isn't as easy as they thought it would be. So the U.S. Customs and Border Protection is currently just stretched beyond their limits, but the men and women who protect the border every day are still doing some really good work. On Thursday last week, U.S. Border Patrol agents working near the U.S.-Mexico international border arrested two convicted sex offenders who had entered the United States illegally. Both men had felony convictions for sex crimes with a minor. One was a Mexican national and the other was an illegal from El Salvador. On Friday, an undercover operation by the Border Patrol netted an estimated 220 pounds of methamphetamine, 110 pounds of cocaine, and thousands more of just regular pills. So when you hear the media say all these migrants are just poor immigrants looking for a better way of life, keep in mind that there's some very bad people taking advantage of the chaos to get into our country so they can sell their drugs or take advantage of your daughter, frankly. Unless you believe the lying politicians who say the Border Patrol isn't compassionate enough, keep in mind these men and women are out there putting themselves at risk every day to safeguard the very people who are crossing our frontier illegally. U.S. Border Patrol agents assigned to the Eagle Pass Station Marine Unit last week rescued two undocumented immigrants. That was Thursday morning after they nearly drowned attempting to cross the Rio Grande River. This year, we're looking at likely more than a million people flooding into America without waiting in line or getting a visa. Now, that's a catastrophe for sure, but it's not without precedent. In fact, about half the years since 1980 have seen more than a million illegals enter our country. Think about that for a minute. The claim that there are only 11 or 12 million people living illegally in the United States is probably way off. In fact, according to a study by two Yale professors and an MIT guy, there are approximately 22.1 million illegal aliens living in the United States, and that's more than twice previous estimates. The ironic thing about that is those professors set out to prove the number was much lower than the 11 million figure commonly being used. They were able to prove some faulty methodology in the study that came up and then found that generally accepted estimates, they were shocked to discover the true number is much, much higher than that. So keep in mind how much this costs you and me. According to the Federation for American Immigration Reform, back in 2017, the total cost of illegal immigration for the United States, that's federal, state, and local, was approximately $116 billion. Now, FARA arrived at that number by subtracting the tax revenue paid by illegal aliens, which is about $19 billion, from the total economic impact of illegal immigration, $134.9 billion. That's based on previous estimates. In under 4 years, the cost has risen more than $3 billion. Evidence shows that the tax payments by illegal aliens fail to cover the cost of the many services that they consume. For example, a large percentage of illegal aliens who work in the underground economy normally avoid paying taxes at all because they don't file taxes. Many illegal aliens actually receive a net cash profit through the refundable tax credit program. The thing is this, good news travels fast in Latin America, and you can just get across the United States and get there however you can and work for cash under the table, qualify for a few social programs, and even get a tax refund when you didn't pay any tax. Then you can send some of that money home to the rest of your kin and pay for their trip to the land of milk and honey. Now listen, I've talked to Latinos who have never been to the United States who can tell me all about how to game the system here in the U.S. And even if they get put in detention, they're going to get three hots and a cot, daily hot showers, free calls home, all of which represents more than what they're used to back in their home country. Now, I'm not saying this out of hatefulness. I don't think you can blame these people. I mean, it'd be like if somebody told me that all I had to do was take a bus to the border of Canada and they'd pay me $1 million a year for doing nothing. I mean, who wouldn't get in that line? People like to excoriate our president for suggesting a moratorium on the importation of people from countries known for terrorism. But there's actually a lot of precedent for that sort of thing. We can go all the way back, for example, and look at some of our history relating to immigration at a place called Ellis Island.
In the last decades of the 19th century, increasing numbers of immigrants arrived on America's shores. At the time, immigration was largely regulated by the states. Castle Garden was originally run by the state of New York, and then as the tide of immigration increased, it really became too overwhelming of a situation for New York. Several laws enacted during the 1880s increased the federal government's role in regulating immigration. To better administer federal immigration policies, Congress eventually passed the Immigration Act of 1891, which placed immigration under federal control. This law also created a new federal office that was later named the Bureau of Immigration and charged it with overseeing the admission of immigrants. To inspect immigrants arriving in the United States, the Bureau of Immigration opened the Ellis Island Immigration Station in New York Harbor on January 2, 1892. And this is where you can really see Castle Garden as representing the state's control of immigration, and then how with Ellis Island and the Immigration Service, it became taken over by the federal authorities.
Ellis Island started out physically a lot smaller than it is today. It was about 3 1/3 acres. Once the federal government got the island, they started enlarging it. The final size was 27.5 acres.
Ellis Island included an inspection hall, hearing and detention rooms, hospitals, cafeterias, administrative offices, a railroad ticket office, and space for immigrant aid societies.
Now, Ellis opened in 1892 as a processing center for legal immigrants wanting to come to the United States. By 1907, the center passed a milestone. 1 million people entered through the center that year, the first time in history. But back then, migrants were subjected to some pretty harsh requirements before they'd be granted access to the USA.
The Immigration Service was anxious to that every immigrant come through a place like Ellis Island and be legally inspected by a U.S. immigrant inspector and pass inspection and be admitted to the United States. Then the person would be lawfully in this country. And those who avoided it were people that the Immigration Service was very, very anxious to get a hold of.
Only about 20% of the immigrants that came through were held for additional questioning. Of the 20% that were held for further questioning, only about 2% of those were actually eventually deported.
Today we see the Statue of Liberty with her bronze plaque that has inscribed those lines from that sonnet I started with on this podcast, composed by Emma Lazarus. It says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Well,
That's a great sentiment. Liberals like to point to those words as proof that America should accept every single person who comes from anywhere on earth that happens to be poorer than we are. But back in those early days at Ellis Island, America had standards. And if you didn't meet the bar that we set, you were on the next ship back home. It's as simple as that. There were health standards. You could be denied for having missing limbs, missing eyes, being blind, even just being too weak. And obviously, if you were contagious or, you know, something like that, you were gone immediately. But we didn't get that many of those because the shipping lines received a fine of $100 for every person they delivered to America who didn't qualify for asylum. There were economic requirements. The U.S. wanted to see that you had at least $30 in your pocket, or if not, someone already in the States who would sponsor you. I mean, imagine if we made them do that. And there were even political and ideological requirements. You couldn't be an anarchist, for example, or a polygamist. Anybody with a criminal background wasn't allowed. And you could even be disqualified if the reviewer just thought you were a little too slow up here, or for any reason you might become a ward of the state. If they thought so, you were gone. My, how times have changed, though. Today, many, if not most, of the 100,000 or so migrants crossing our southern border every month are coming here specifically to become wards of the state. Let that sink in for a minute. What does that mean for our country? In 1924, the U.S. determined there were too many people that they deemed undesirable emigrating to the U.S. So the Immigration Act was passed that severely restricted immigration by people from Poland, Italy, Greece, Eastern Europe, as well as Jews. Can you imagine? So it's been done before. Part of the job of the United States government is to control immigration. Point, period, end of story. Because without that control, we simply aren't a country. Now, I'm all for people being able to travel wherever they want to go. And truthfully, the U.S. could probably handle another 100 million people as long as we didn't give them anything but opportunity, and if they spread out a little bit, maybe. But unfettered immigration coupled with a broken and overly generous social welfare program, which, don't kid yourself, those programs are intended to take money from a small group of voters in order to buy the loyalty of a much larger group of voters. Well, that's a recipe for the fall of our civilization. And it's as simple as that. I've been reporting on this for a long, long time. And I want to remind you of one thing. There are tens of thousands of people languishing in the system who are trying to come here legally, do it the right way. And they're having to wait for sometimes years because they're being run over by the hundreds of thousands of people who just choose to jump the river illegally.
10 years ago, a decade ago, we used to have 95% of Mexican nationals coming across. That number has changed. Now we're having about 85% Central Americans, about 10% Mexicans, and still 5% from other parts of the world.
From San Diego, California to Brownsville, Texas, there are 48 border crossings where you can legally go from Mexico to the United States. This bridge spans the Rio Grande between the Mexican city of Juarez and El Paso, Texas. It's crossings like these that the Trump administration is trying to encourage people claiming asylum to use. But here, there are more than 200 people waiting in line to claim asylum already. And the line moves so slowly, most migrants will be sleeping on the sidewalk for more than a week. Many of them are Cubans fleeing communism. These Cuban women have been making their way through Central America for more than 10 months.
We had a lot of problems along the way. The police in some places took our money, assaulted us, and the immigration authorities were even more corrupt.
She's been sleeping on this bridge for 5 days already, trying to enter the U.S. the right way. The wait keeps getting longer, though, because so many people enter this sector illegally, because jumping the fence means jumping to the front of the line. This is the reason the Trump administration sent more than 7,000 troops to the border, to shore up the fence between the points of entry and encourage people to come in the right way. Earlier this year, the president's zero-tolerance policy on enforcing family separations caused international outrage. But here in Juarez, I found many Central American families who are being separated from their loved ones by lax enforcement of immigration law. This man left his home in Guatemala 18 days ago with his 10-year-old daughter, but left the rest of his family behind.
No hay precio. y los mantener mis patojos, pues como dos patojes, patojes y dos gemelos de varón de 5 meses. Por eso venimos aquí para empezar, pues, los patojos, ¿qué voy a hacer después?
So the number of asylum cases waiting to be heard in the United States right now is over 1 million cases. That's up 30% just this year. And what that means is that one of these Central Americans who applies for asylum or enters the United States illegally and is given a court date may end up living in the U.S. for over 3 years before they ever go in front of a judge. Now, when they do, there's a good chance that their case will be rejected because more than half of them are. But even if they are rejected, many times they just melt back into the society and keep living in the U.S. illegally as long as they can. And that means their families back in Central America will be without fathers, mothers, and breadwinners, potentially for years to come. From El Paso, Texas, I'm Chuck Holton for CBN News.
So look, a wall will slow the tide, but only removing the monetary incentives will fix the problem for good. Is that humane? Well, it certainly is for those who are paying the bill. That's all I've got for today's podcast, folks. I appreciate you watching, and I'll see you back here again tomorrow. In the meantime, I'm going to take the first swim of the summer right now. Here goes.
Yeehaw! Oh, that's cold. Whew.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.